You ever lose something and just know it's still out there, waiting? I'm Tail Dragger, and this is The Hangar on Radio Hangar. Today I want to tell you about a bunch of guys who lost not one airplane, not two, but 8 aircraft under a glacier in Greenland during World War II. And then half a century later, somebody actually went back and dug one out. Pull up a chair for this one. It's a good one. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation Challenge coins for every milestone in flight, first solo private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at aviationsoul.com. All right, let's set the scene. It's July of 1942. The United States has been in the war for about 7 months, and we're trying to get as many fighters and bombers across the Atlantic as we possibly can. Now, the way you did that back then was you didn't put them on a ship, not the fighters anyway. You flew them. And the route went from Maine up through Labrador, across to Greenland, then over to Iceland, and finally on to the British Isles. They called it the North Atlantic Ferry Route, and it was about as forgiving as it sounds. On July 15th, a flight of 6 Lockheed P-38 Lightnings and 2 Boeing B-17 Flying Fortresses took off from a base in Greenland headed for Iceland. The flight was codenamed Operation Bolero, and these pilots were not seasoned combat veterans. Most of them were young men, barely out of flight training, ferrying brand new airplanes to the war. Now the P-38, the Lightning, that was a remarkable machine. Twin booms, twin engines, centerline nacelle for the pilot, Allison V-1710 engines, counter-rotating propellers, tricycle landing gear. She was fast, she was beautiful, and she was absolutely not designed for what was about to happen. The weather over Greenland turned on them. And when I say turned, I mean it went from flyable to absolute zero visibility in what felt like minutes. Greenland weather does not negotiate with you. It doesn't care what your mission is. Ceiling came down, snow started flying, and these 8 aircraft were suddenly trapped between a wall of ice below and a wall of clouds above with nowhere to go. The flight leader made the call. They were turning back, but turning back to what? The field behind them was socked in too. They had no place to land. Fuel gauges were dropping, and below them was nothing but the Greenland ice cap, a sheet of ice thousands of feet thick, covering everything from horizon to horizon. One by one, those pilots put their airplanes down on the ice. The P-38s, with their tricycle gear, actually did better than you might expect. They bellied in, slid across the ice, and stopped. The B-17s came down too. And here's the miracle. Every single crew member survived. All 25 men walked away from those landings. Think about that for a second. 8 military aircraft force-landed on a glacier, and nobody died. The rescue crews came by dog sled and by boat over the following days. They got every last man out, but the airplanes stayed right where they were. And Greenland started doing what Greenland does. It started snowing, and it kept snowing. Season after season, year after year, those 8 aircraft sank deeper and deeper into the ice cap. Within a few years, they were covered. Within a decade, they were buried. The war ended, the world moved on, and those planes became a rumor, a legend. 8 ghost ships frozen in time under a river of ice. Now here's where it gets interesting. In 1981, a couple of fellows from Atlanta, Georgia, decided they were going to go get those airplanes. Pat Epps, who ran an airport fixed base operator at Peachtree DeKalb Airport, and Richard Taylor, an architect, they figured those planes had been sitting in nature's deep freeze for nearly 40 years. They'd be in perfect condition, right? Just brush off the snow, fuel them up, fly them home. Simple. They were spectacularly wrong. They mounted their first expedition in 81. They brought metal detectors and a lot of enthusiasm. They searched. They found nothing. Came back again, found nothing. The ice had moved, you see. Glaciers are not static. The ice cap flows. Slowly, like cold honey, and those airplanes had drifted from their original position. It took years, multiple expeditions. They brought in ground-penetrating radar. They hired geophysicists, they consulted with glaciologists, and finally, in 1988, they found them. The radar showed the unmistakable signatures of metal objects deep beneath the surface, but here is what nobody expected. Those airplanes were not sitting under 10 feet of snow. They were not under 20 feet. They were under 268 feet of solid, compressed glacier ice. Over the decades, the annual snowfall had compacted into ice, layer upon layer, and those aircraft had been pushed down to a depth that made recovery seem impossible. Most people would have walked away at that point. Pat Epps and Richard Taylor did not walk away. They formed the Greenland Expedition Society and started figuring out how to extract a World War II fighter from under the equivalent of a 25-story building made of ice. They developed a device they called the Super Gopher. It was essentially a thermal probe, a long copper tube that melted its way down through the ice using hot water. They would melt a shaft straight down to the airplane, then carve out a cavern around it, then disassemble the aircraft piece by piece and haul it back up to the surface. The logistics were staggering. They were operating on the ice cap, hours from the nearest settlement. Everything had to be flown in or dragged in. Fuel, generators, living quarters, food. Temperatures routinely hit minus 30, minus 40. The wind never stopped, and they were trying to do precision disassembly work in an ice cave 268 feet underground. It took from 1992 to 1995 to recover a single airplane. They chose one of the P-38 Lightnings. When they finally reached it, the airplane was not in the pristine condition they had imagined. The ice had crushed parts of it, the wings were damaged, the fuselage was compressed, but the bones were there. The engines, the superchargers, the instrument panel, the control surfaces, all of it recoverable. They brought her up in pieces, crated everything, and shipped it all back to Middlesboro, Kentucky, where a restoration team led by Bob Carden and later Roy Kinsey at a company that became Epps Aviation began the painstaking process of putting her back together. Now, I've seen a lot of warbird restorations in my time. I have stood in shops where fellows were rebuilding Mustangs and Corsairs and Bearcats, and the work is always impressive. But what they did with this airplane goes beyond impressive into something I can only call devotion. They did not just repair the airframe, they essentially rebuilt it around the original components. Every piece of that airplane that could be saved was saved. The data plate, the original placards, the structural members that survived the ice, all of it was incorporated into the restored aircraft. They machined new parts where the originals were destroyed. They tracked down new old stock Allison engines. They went through tens of thousands of hours of work over nearly 10 years. They named her Glacier Girl. On October 26, 2002, 60 years after she went down on the Greenland ice cap, Glacier Girl flew again. Test pilot Steve Hinton took her up from Middlesboro, Kentucky, and she flew. Both Allison engines running smooth, counter-rotating props biting the air, that distinctive twin boom silhouette climbing up into a clear autumn sky. I want you to think about what that moment meant. That airplane rolled off the Lockheed assembly line in Burbank, California in 1942. A young American pilot flew her to Greenland on the way to war. She went into the ice before she ever saw combat. And 60 years later, after spending more time buried in a glacier than any airplane in history, she was flying again. There is a photograph from that first flight. Glacier Girl is gear up, clean, climbing, sunlight on polished aluminum, and if you look at that picture and you don't feel something, well, I don't know what to tell you. You might be in the wrong hobby. Glacier Girl has been flying the air show circuit for years now. She's based at the Lewis Air Legends Collection. She shows up at Oshkosh, at Sun and Fun, at Reading. Every time that airplane rolls down a taxiway, she's carrying a story that most people can barely believe. 268 feet of ice. A decade of recovery and restoration. 60 years between flights. What gets me about this story isn't just the airplane, though. It's the people. Pat Epps passed away in 2009. He spent decades of his life and substantial personal fortune chasing a dream that most people told him was crazy. Richard Taylor, same thing. The restoration crew in Kentucky, some of them worked on that airplane for years, for not much more than the satisfaction of seeing her whole again. Bob Carden gave years of his life to that project. There are 7 more aircraft still down there, by the way. The other 5 P-38s and 2B-17s, still buried, still drifting slowly with the glacier toward the coast. Every year they move a little farther, settle a little deeper. Someday the glacier will calve into the sea and take them with it, unless somebody goes back. You know, back when AVGAS was cheap and airspace was free, we used to talk about how an airplane is never really dead as long as somebody cares enough to save it. Glacier Girl proves that in a way nobody could have imagined, buried under a glacier for half a century, and she still came home. The story of Glacier Girl is drawn from the Greenland Expedition Society's own records, the Lost Squadron documentary, and several accounts published over the years in Air and Space Magazine and Warbirds International. If you want more stories like this one, come find us at radiohangar.com. Fly safe out there and take care of the old ones. They've got stories to tell.